Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Conaway, founder and CEO of Innovate Her KC. And I do have to tell you that we have a fantastic sponsor for today's episode. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Gusto. So Gusto has modern solutions for modern HR problems, whether it is talent management, payroll, onboarding tools. Gusto's HR platform has it all. You're going to be smarter than your competitors. They're going to make it so easy to manage your HR. And the best thing is you can try a 3-month subscription for free right now. Just sign up at gusto.com/startup hustle to get started. That is gusto.com/startup hustle. So folks, for those of you who listen to my episodes on a regular basis, I think y'all know I'm pretty vocal about the fact that I love talking about equity in entrepreneurial ecosystems. It is one of my favorite topics in the whole wide world. And I think y'all know that I'm a talker, so that's saying a lot. Today's guest, I am so excited to have her with us today. We have with us today Stephanie Melodia, founder of Bloom. And Bloom is... it's a brand marketing agency for high growth tech scale-ups. Stephanie herself has been named, this is so impressive to me, and you know that we're going to talk more about this, but has been named the UK's top 20 most influential female founders. She's been named to that list. How impressive is that? You know, Stephanie is also the host of an entrepreneurship podcast, much like Startup Hustle, called Time to Bloom, and then has the Bloom Presents event series with feminist panel events for International Women's Day every March, business sessions in September. I mean, what a powerhouse. Stephanie, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So we're going to have to kind of dial it back a little bit, because even folks, like folks listening at home, even in the like pre-show prep that we do, Stephanie and I were just kind of off. We were just like, let's talk about this and this and this. And it was lovely, lovely to talk to her. So we are about to have a very good conversation, but I'm going to start that conversation by asking the question. And the question is, Stephanie, tell us about your journey.
I was born here in London, UK, to a British mum, Italian dad. I'm not going to go through the full life story, don't worry, but I'm going abroad. And came back to London just over 10 years ago, which is where I properly started my career. And it was actually beginning with a boutique agency here in London, where I was so blessed to have the most amazing boss you could have ever wished for. You know, sometimes you just meet people and you're so grateful that your paths have crossed at that time and space, and you
absolutely
came together in this way, which has really informed, you know, the main subject of today's conversation around promoting gender equality in startup communities. Working for this incredible man has really shaped my feminist philosophy, which we'll get a bit more stuck into. But essentially, he was just the most incredible mentor. He was, you know, as the phrase goes, male, pale and stale, which is very offensive to middle-aged white men. He was one of those who fell into that category. Sure. But he was absolutely amazing. He was the best boss to have had at the beginning of my career when I was a young 22-year-old. And from there, essentially grew and grew. I went and worked for a larger agency. I then finally went in-house from a marketing perspective. I wanted to see things from different sides of the fence before eventually then setting up my own company, which is something that I always set out to do. My previous bosses had always, at least half jokingly, sort of talked about the day I'd run my own company without me even mentioning anything to them. And so set up Bloom, my brand marketing agency. Thank you so much for doing such a wonderful intro there at the start. I founded Bloom just over 4 years ago. And since then, it's been a wild ride, as you can imagine, as any business owner, you know, doing it all yourself. Riding the rough with the smooth, lots of stuff going on.
And you're doing things that you never ever thought that you would do. Like the day that I was doing electrical code work, like trying to bring our electrical up to code, I was like, this is not what I anticipated when I decided to become an entrepreneur.
The key is to get as soon as you can afford it, as soon as you're making enough money, is to get those things like delegated. And part of that, you know, we talk a lot about the importance of self-awareness as a leader. In order to be a good leader, you need to really know where your strengths lie, where your weaknesses are, because funny enough, the more that you progress through your career, the higher up that you get up that career ladder, a funny thing starts to happen where less and less people start to tell you, you know, what's wrong with you, or course correct, or, you know, your family, right. More people start to agree with you, right? Because you're the boss.
You've built credibility.
You are the boss. And so you find more and more people are kind of nodding along and listening to what you're saying. So, you know, keeping yourself, you know, I guess it's just grounded, or just that level of objective realism, if you like, with who you are. And part of that is to understand, look, I'm good at this, I'm not great at this. If I'm not great at this and someone else can do it the same or to a better level and I can afford to delegate, then, you know, that's the key, because otherwise it's just a fast track to burnout if you're doing everything for too long.
Yeah. So you said something that was really, really fascinating to me. You said a lot of things that were really, really fascinating to me, and we're going to drill down on a bunch of them, but I'm going to start, and I think I'm going to, I might surprise you and I might surprise our listeners with where I start, because we're talking about gender equality in the startup space and in entrepreneurship, but one of the things that you said, it really resonated with me. So your first, I guess, mentor, champion, advocate was a man. And I have to tell you, I actually have the same experience. The first boss that I ever had that I felt was truly invested in my success and taught me how to be a better leader was a man. And so one of the other interesting things that you said, you said, you know, middle-aged white men, it almost feels like an insult and we hesitate to say it. I have that as well ingrained in me a little bit, because I feel like I don't like parsing people down to their identities. I like to see more than that. But that being said, like, he was, you know, middle-aged white man, and he was the best boss I have ever had. He is the reason that I am able to be the leader that I am today. And he, Innovate Her wouldn't exist without him, because he gave me a voice. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about that. I want to hear, first of all, I'd love to know the name of your mentor, if you feel comfortable disclosing, because let's shout out the people we love. But then I'd like to hear more about that relationship and how that changed you, prepared you for your career. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I mean, one of my most favorite subjects. You won't be able to shut me up to talk about one of the most amazing men I ever had the pleasure of you know, mentoring me. His name was Simon Baker. He's no longer with us, very sadly. We definitely lost an incredible man a few years ago. But it's something that has made me so incredibly passionate. I mentioned in my intro there, you know, how it shaped my feminist philosophy, which is very much all around the he for she, the male allyship. We're now on this fourth wave of feminism. We've gone through these phases where, you know, of course, nothing, but I don't think you can ever have enough of female empowerment or lifting each other up and the sisterhood and all the rest of it. But my view is, if I'm at this level, I'm only going to bring you up to here. where logic dictates, if most of the seats around the boardroom table just so happen, as you say, to be filled by these people who happen to be Malbert and Stale, they're able to take you much further. And so actually there's a stat that's really stuck with me from the post, you know, we're now in this post Me Too era, where this report that was conducted by Girl Boss and a few other kind of organizations that uncovered 60%, so over half of male managers since that movement now found themselves to be incredibly uncomfortable mentoring young women in the workplace, which you and I, you know, of course, you know, this is, we've spoken incredibly highly of these first mentors who happen to be male, who, you know, set us on this path. And to this day, you know, I still think about Simon, and if I'm having difficult situations with work, or, you know, you've got the whole what would Jesus do, in my mind it's what would Simon do, and I think back to him even though he's no longer with us. So the idea that these men now, they've been, you know, I wouldn't say that we've necessarily gone too far, because these are injustices and these are wrongs that needed to be, you know, righted. But if now, you know, the knock-on effect is now men feel uncomfortable, or they're so hyper-aware, they don't know, you know, what to say or how to handle situations, and they'd rather just, you know, it's just too much of a risk, it's too scary, they don't know, they've just got that insecurity now to take these women under their wing, is just, that for me is just, it's just making me feel like we're going in the wrong direction. So this is also where I think that, so just an idea that I just want to build on this as well, and my train of thought here is also, again, you know, empowerment is great, sisterhood is fantastic, you know, I'm part of lots of different female entrepreneur networks, I think they're wonderful. But again, I think in order to progress, you know, I think that's great as part of the second, third waves of feminism, but we're creating these echo chambers. And you know, you said, I host these International Women's Day events every year. I make sure when I'm putting together my panel lineup, I make sure that there's not only a diversity ethnically, but also that we have at least one male representative on the panel as well, because it's diversity and inclusion. We need to make sure that we're not cutting out other sides of the conversation, that men feel comfortable taking part in that conversation, that they feel comfortable even attending those sorts of events. Why would a man attend an International Women's Day event that's got an all-female lineup filled with a room full of women? You know, they're then the odd one out, and they're then sticking out like a sore thumb, and they're not feeling too comfortable. There is that inequality that needs to be fixed, of course. So, you know, there's lots of sensitive areas here, but that is, you know, my view on it. We need to have a he for she, a male allyship stance when it comes to achieving gender equality.
So that is so interesting. And I do just, I'm going to take us back just a second, because you may have heard me giggle when you said that 60% statistic. I was not giggling because it's funny, because I actually think it's a travesty. But I was giggling because I had actually written it down as a talking point. I was like, oh, she's about to say it. I know she's about to say it. But no, you're absolutely correct. You know, in a world where we have not yet achieved gender parity in a lot of industries and verticals, you know, when it comes to finding mentorship and championship within your organization, anything that we can do to make that easier is a good thing. And so we don't want women missing out on opportunities because somebody didn't feel comfortable reaching out, you know, taking their hand and helping to give them that leg up. But you said a few really interesting things, and I think you and I, we have seen, we have identified the same challenge, but we actually have very different ways of dealing with it. So to your point, there have been countless events that I have attended, professional development events, where I will see what we call mannels, all male panels. And never in my life have I looked at that panel and said to myself, that is not a space for me, because I feel as though having all male panels is the default. And so when you see gender parity, when you see racial parity, it's a pleasant surprise. So I want to push back on you a little bit or drill down a little bit, because one of the things that I do, Innovator, we have a lot of what we call female focused events. Men are absolutely welcome, but we prioritize the woman's experience. And so what I do is when we have an event coming up like the Innovator Awards or Girls Just Want to Have Funding, I make it a point to reach out to male leaders within the community and say, hey, you know, you have approached me in the past, said that you wanted to be an ally and co-conspirator. One way that you can do that is by attending this event and listening to these women leaders, because you have a lot to learn from them. But what we need to do is we need to establish a visible line to co-conspiratorship. And a part of that is just being present, being there.
Yeah.
So that's something that I do. And I do agree with you, and I'll tell you how I agree with you. You know, Innovator, we have a board of directors, and we have two men on our board. You know, not a majority, but that was a very intentional choice, because to your point, your earlier point, if we are trying to achieve diversity, but more so than that, inclusion, because we want to have more perspectives at the table and make better decisions as a result, then yeah, we need to have both men and women on panel or on boards and in leadership roles. So I absolutely agree with you there. And I wonder, what do you think of that approach?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've definitely carried out the same, that same strategy of reaching out to these guys in my network as well, and making sure that they're showing up. I am affiliated with Ada Ventures, which is an early stage VC fund here in the UK as well, which is very much focused on positive impact and, you know, using capital for good. These things are going to take time, and they're helping to redirect the funds and the wealth and making sure that capital goes to some of these pockets of the nation and adjusting some of these things. And so last year I had the co-founder, the partner of the fund, talking about their investment strategy, and specifically on, you know, the female founder front. So I'm a scout of theirs, strategically placed to help open up the avenues to get that wealth into, you know, into female founded companies. Again, another stat to throw out here is a recent report showed that for every £1 of UK venture capital investment, one penny of that went to female founded companies.
Yeah.
So I think it's very, with these sorts of things, it's so easy, you know, especially when you see these stats and these reports, it's so easy to think, oh, it's so doom and gloom. And, you know, how far have we really come? How far are we really making significant progression here? And the truth is that because it is so complex, it really does take time to solve. So, you know, you've got so many interesting perspectives to look at this from way back at the very start of, you know, early child development, right? So you've got the toys that children are given when they're growing up.
The easy bake ovens versus the trucks and the baby dolls versus the science kits, you know.
It's really bad. It is getting better. And again, for me, it's being in the UK, we're supposed to be, you know, we're a first world country, we're supposed to be leading the way with some of these things. So at the moment, this is supposed to be, as you know, as good as it gets. But you know, I grew up abroad, my family still live out in Spain, and so a while ago I was out there visiting, and I actually, just on this note, with these heavily gendered toys, my sister asked me to accompany her on a quick shopping trip for a present for one of her friend's babies. And just walking into the shop, where again, I do think it's better here in the UK, but walking in, just to your point, you literally had the whole right side of the shop. It was just Barbie pink. It was just like pink everywhere. It had, to your point, the ovens, the prams, the pushchairs. And then you had the boy section, which had the dinosaurs and the trucks and all this.
Right.
So when we're talking about, you know, startup communities, that's inherently, you know, the technology sector. And so if you think, well, this is something that stems from a very young age, it's how we're conditioned, it's the language that parents unknowingly, completely unconsciously use when they're talking to their daughter versus their son. And so over time, this conditioning that then it seeps into where you decide to major, where you decide to focus for your career. And so, you know, the STEM industries, the science, technology, engineering, math, it's very male dominated. And so in the technology sector today, in startup communities, you've got largely men that's already in there and doing the work. So you've not got that diversity of thought or perspective on the work that's happening. And then interestingly, the other level with the technology piece there is new technologies with AI, ML, etc. What I find also very interesting here, and I know there's lots of different subjects that we can dive into, but when you think about the fact that technology has these connotations of innovation and progress and disruption and pushing the envelope and doing and ripping up the rule book. Whereas actually, when you think about machine learning, artificial intelligence, these are patterns that are being reiterated and compounded over time. And so in the same way that our brains are literally evolved over thousands of years to be efficient, to conserve calories, our right. brains are the best pattern finders to make shortcuts so that we're not having to consciously think about getting up out of bed in the morning and breathing and all these things that we do subconsciously. So in the right. same way, there's this parallel with artificial intelligence, this technology where it's made to be efficient and it's patterns, but actually all of this is where on the flip side, you get the unconscious bias, the prejudices, and then if they are being coded by a predominantly male workforce,
right,
in an industry that, you know, is supposed to be the opposite and it's supposed to be very progressive, then, you know, this is where we have these problems. And this is where it's a tricky one. We need to make sure that women are being spotlighted. You know, I'm also part of female founder, you know, women speaker communities. Absolutely, we need that. But again, I think for me, I feel like we are verging too dangerously into this area of echo chambers of sure. diversity and exclusion when we keep it, when we don't make the other side feel comfortable to be part of the conversation.
Yeah. Well, so just a couple of things. Number one, I'm going to let you in on a little secret, Stephanie. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
So sometimes, on occasion, when I have a little extra time and I'm walking around like a Target or some kind of department store, I will go and I will take the NASA shirts and the science shirts from yes. this section, and I will put them in the girls section because it just irritates me to see that there's this clear delineation between what is appropriate for boys and what is appropriate for girls. And I'm sure I would like to apologize to the individuals who work in these stores. I'm sure that the people who stock hate me, but sorry, not sorry. So just wanted to tell you that, because as you were love talking, that. I was like, yes, yes, that's true. I also send emails to companies around Christmas when they send out the for her and the for him lists. I'm just like, could we maybe rethink that a little bit? But so to your point, I think that's so interesting. And you know, we see this. I think one of the examples that pops into my head, when we were talking, there was a period of time when there was like all of this controversy surrounding, I think it was Google's AI system. Like they had built this artificial intelligence facial recognition system. And one of the problems that they were having is that the technology was having difficulty recognizing people of color because it had been built using white people because white people were on the development teams. And so there was this huge uproar because if you're creating a product that is designed for the masses, designed for everyone, you have to make sure that it's representative of everyone. And so that's just an example, you know, but I mean, this could apply to anything. Like when you look at design thinking, you know, designing to solve a problem for the most vulnerable among us or for all of us. You know, you look at cars tend to be designed for men. The pedals are larger. Women have more difficult time working pedals in cars, which could actually potentially lead to an increase in accident rates. And so anytime you are creating and making decisions in a vacuum, and you are not listening to or attuned to the needs of the other, you're missing out on an opportunity or you're creating a blind spot, right?
I mean, there are so many everyday examples of this. It is, you know, these people, again, they need to be aware of this. You know, sometimes you're too close. You can't see the wood for the trees is the expression. But some other examples just to add on to those as well, which I've also heard is around So phones, iPhones also, like I'm a fairly petite woman. I have tiny hands. Yeah. And the phones, I can't hold. I need to now have the cover with the finger kind of loop behind to hold my phone. It's so crazy.
And they just keep getting bigger to the point where it's uncomfortable. And I mean, I am not particularly petite and I have long fingers and long palms and I still have difficulty holding my iPhone at times.
It's these little things. And there was a whole movement a little while ago as well called Everyday Sexism. And for me, it's like those tiny things that there were so many that I hadn't even realized. But as soon as it was pointed out to me, my stomach sunk. And I just thought to myself, this is in a way almost worse because it's infiltrated our everyday life so much that it's just not even noticeable anymore. Another quick example I wanted to share before I forget as well is apparently in architecture. This is one of those things where it's like, now I've said it, let's see how many of you, the listeners as well, notice this when you're out and about. Yeah. It's also from an architecture standpoint is when you go to an office, a bar, a restaurant, anywhere with washrooms, you will very often find the men's to be first. They'll be closest.
Right.
And then it will be the women's afterwards. And so it's one of those things, as soon as it was pointed out or read about it, I then started seeing it everywhere. And I thought, again, it's this everyday, it's not intentional. You know, I think this is the other thing as well. It's not about, you know, pointing fingers or making these guys, you know, feel bad, or it's everyone's got their own unique perspective, but there is that system that's broken. It's opening up your eyes to these things so that you get that diversity of thought, so that actually these things that just didn't even cross your mind are now being considered.
Well, and so I think it bears mentioning that what you're talking about is privilege. Like, I don't have to think about this because it's not part of my experience. That is a form of privilege.
Yeah.
And so breaking down and deconstructing that privilege, again, as you said, it's not an attack, but it is a reality that needs to be talked about and that needs to be, like, the only way that we are going to solve these problems and solve these climates and these inequities, the only way that we're going to solve them is by first acknowledging them and then discussing them and then coming up with solutions. Like, that's kind of how this has to go. And I think you're right. You said this a little earlier, like, we are seeing a lot of improvement, but we're not done. I don't know if the work will ever be done. And so it's just a matter of continuing to have these conversations and holding people accountable to the choices that they make in how equitable the systems and the products and the programs that they create are. So really quickly, I do want to break in. And of course, we have, you know, gone down so many rabbit holes and I'm just fascinated by this conversation. Darn you, Stephanie. But I do have to tell you that today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Gusto. So managing your team can be so easy. Easy as 1, 2, 3 with Gusto. There are no more late nights processing payroll, dealing with business tax filings, all of those things that stress entrepreneurs out. No more painful spreadsheets for attendance tracking, which I got to tell you, I hated those. Say hello to your new HR platform. You can check out gusto.com/startup hustle to get a free 3-month subscription now. That's gusto.com/startup hustle. And I think you know by now, we at Startup Hustle love anything that makes an entrepreneur's life easier because we know how difficult it is. And we definitely recommend checking out Gusto. So back into it. We are talking to Stephanie Melodia of Bloom. We are talking about building equitable systems and achieving gender parity and all of these amazing things. And so I'm going to get a little, we've been speaking generally, I think, up till now. And I'm going to add, let's get a little specific about the entrepreneurial space. If you don't mind, just bear with me for a second. Indulge me. I'm going to tell a story. And so, because what I do is so directly related to inclusion, it's one of our foundational values and ethics, and it's how I make decisions as a leader of innovator. I stake our reputation in our ability to be equitable and to recognize intersectionality. So, all of that to be said, I get invited to spaces where sometimes I am the only white person, and that's okay. But I do want to say that often I walk into the room and I'll look around and I will be very aware of the fact that I'm the only white person in the room. I don't feel any malice. It is not, I'm not sad or angry or anything like that, but it is very noticeable. I stick out. And so I had an epiphany one of the first few times this happened. I was like, I wonder if this is what it's like to be a person of color in the startup space, looking around, not seeing people who look like you, think like you, act like you. I think one of the first times it happened, I went to a pre-showing of For Colored Girls. And in the beginning of this show, one of the things that they do is they sing a sing song. You know, when you were a child and you were jumping rope or you were playing with your friends, and you were like, say, say, oh, play. And like you sang the songs and did the hand claps. They started to do the actors on stage started to do the sing song. And all of the women of color in the audience around me started to sing the sing song, but I didn't know it. Because it wasn't a part of my history. It wasn't a part of my culture. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know the words. And so I feel like being a woman or someone from a marginalized community in the startup and entrepreneurial space can sometimes you don't know the words, you know? And so I want to talk to you a little bit about that. What are the challenges and blind spots and opportunities that you see specifically in the entrepreneurial ecosystems that you work with?
I love this. Thank you so much for sharing that story. It's so interesting to dive into these things. So what immediately came up for me is I'm not a woman of color. I appreciate if people are only listening to my voice. But I have never fully fit in everywhere 100% because I'm half Italian. I grew up abroad. That I kind of lived, there was always kind of one foot in, one foot out. I was kind of part of the community, but not fully. Like I've never been 100% fully part of the community. And even now, even in the UK, I have a very British accent, as you can all hear. I live in London. I've been living back here for 10 years now. It's where I was born. But my childhood, my teenage years was abroad, was somewhere else. So it's really funny. It's really kind of jarring for a lot of people as well when sometimes they'll share, similar to this sing song that you shared in your example there, someone else might say a particular phrase, or like there'll be slang, or there'll be something from what happened here in the UK when I wasn't around, and I'll just be, it'd be completely over my head, I've got no idea what you guys are talking about. And it's so jarring because I'm so I'm so British, and then in the same way vice versa, I can be foreign in other ways. So I think this is, interestingly, I want to link this story back to your comments before at the start of our conversation around reducing people to these basic demographics. We work in marketing, these basic identifiers around like gender, color of your skin, et cetera, et cetera. So it is more about culture. It's more about where you've grown up and these things that you have in common, that level of relatability. But again, you're saying you're finding yourself being the only white woman in the room full of people of color. Similarly, I found myself being the only woman in the room a lot of times, but I've still found a way to connect with someone else, whether it's you through music or anything else that we've got in common, right? So I think as the world, gets a smaller place, there's more and more, intersectionality, there's, what's deemed as black can be so many different things. I think I'm not speaking on their behalf. That's not my position, but I have black friends who come from Kenya and Ghana and then Jamaica, Barbados, and it's like completely different parts of the planet, and yet they're still put in this category. So I guess summarizing kind of my views on that great story is just, I think there's more of a melting pot that's happening. It goes deeper than these basic demographics. I think there's ways to find things that you have in common with people that go beyond the color of the skin or your gender, right?
Yeah, and I thank you so much for those thoughts. Now what I want to ask you is, So I talk about this pretty much every show. So I love to give our entrepreneurs tactical advice. This is something that you can do tomorrow or today. Implement it in your business, implement it in your life to to change your behavior, to live your ideals, to do these things that you value. So I'm going to ask you, and we've touched on some, but I'm going to ask you to get very tactical with us. Mm. What are some things that our listeners at home can do to promote gender equity in the startup spaces they occupy?
Yeah, great question. I guess if you're a guy, whether you're a co-founder, whatever kind of position you're in, whether you're in a team, regardless of your job position, if you're in a group meeting and you hear either a female colleague or your female co-founder or someone talking, and being really mindful about not cutting them off. I've definitely noticed that men, it's all just part of, you know, myself included, you know, I get excited and passionate and no one means to be rude and people don't even notice. But I think just being a lot more aware of when women are speaking up, you know, often it's not as easy. They want to get their points across. Make sure that they're heard. Make sure that they're not getting cut off. Get, you know, raise them in those little ways is absolutely possible. Part of that as well is just being a bit more conscious of those everyday kind of sexism examples. These things, again, then maybe not done with, you know, the wrong intention, most likely was just something that wasn't even thought through properly, but just being kind of open your eyes, being aware. And then I guess more practically as well is, you know, there are different kind of forms to fill, what's the word I'm looking for, the where you get kind of votes to make a change,
census,
just like change, you know, like change.org we have over here, where it's like, you know,
surveys.
Not necessarily surveys, but just like to vote to help, you know, when there's certain causes, these injustices, like on change.org, these things are free. They're free to sign up for, you know, you can get these updates, and, you know, doing a digital signature is literally just a click of a button, just to kind of do your part. So I think there's kind of the closer to home, there's stuff that's happening around you, be aware of it, being really sympathetic to that. Picking up the women if you can, don't cut them off, make sure that they're heard. And then, yeah, putting your name to these, I don't know why this word isn't coming to me. It's just a basic word, or it's just signing these, I guess, petitions, right? Just like these petitions.
Okay.
Is an easy thing to do as well. So every little helps.
So I recently, actually very recently, as in like within the past week, posted about that boss that I talked about earlier.
Oh, amazing.
And one of the most transformative things that he did for me was so inconsequential to him. Like he didn't even notice it. And, you know, a couple of years later, I told him, I was like, you did this and it changed my life.
Aww.
It put me on a path. And what he did, so I had come from pretty male-dominated industries. I think folks who listen to the show know that I worked in aerospace, automotive, and IT. Those were like my three. And, you know, by and large, had pretty good experiences, but also had some pretty heinous gendered ones. And so when the first day that I started working at this organization, I was kind of sitting back, just listening to folks spitball about an event that we were planning. And my boss turned around and he just looked at me and he said, Lauren, what do you think? And I was very surprised, but I answered. And he said, well, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do that. And then he turned around back to the whiteboard and started strategizing. And I went to the bathroom to cry because it had been so long since someone had not only asked me for my opinion, but then valued it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, even something as simple as asking for an opinion can be so profound and so meaningful for someone who has been marginalized. And I would say that this goes for women. I would say that it goes for anyone from a marginalized community. Just creating space for that individual to say what they have to say and then acting on it and giving it import, you know, it's amazing. Like I still think on that day as the day that changed me. It's the day that I started on the path to become a leader because I was given permission and agency and acknowledgement that I could be.
Oh, right. And as you said, it was so inconsequential to them, was it? It was so.
It meant nothing to him. Yeah. But to me, it rocked my whole worldview. Oh. And so I just, to our listeners at home, I just want to say that, you know, solving all of the problems related to gender inequality and related to, you know, racial inequity and related to systemic bias, all of these things, they seem so daunting. And we're not going to solve these problems in a day. We're not going to solve these problems by talking about them, but we can incrementally create better spaces, right? It doesn't always have to be the huge shoot for the stars action. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be that everyday quiet empowerment that makes all the difference, right?
I wholeheartedly agree. Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. Well, so I'm going to, we have gone over time. We have almost gone over time. And I know we're going to go over time by the time we have finished talking, but I don't care because I have loved this conversation. But I am going to ask you the human question. Stephanie, are you ready?
I am ready. I'm excited.
Here comes your human question. So what is a secret pleasure that you engage in? I'm going to ask you to like spill the beans and tell us about that secret fun thing that you do that nobody else knows about.
It cut out a little bit there. Was that just secret pleasure? Was what you were asking me?
Yeah, just secret pleasure. So like for instance, mine, this is so ridiculous. I love reading vampire and werewolf romance fiction. And it's a little embarrassing and I don't like telling people about it, but I'm going to tell people about it now because I freaking love it.
My not so secret pleasure, because if you enjoy it and it's legal and above board, then definitely celebrate it. But I guess more my kind of guilty pleasure is selling.
That's a better way to say it. I think that's what I was trying to ask.
Yeah, for sure. I've been watching, so Netflix is Selling Sunset, which is just, I mean, it's absolute trash TV.
Isn't it like really, really high dollar homes and drama? Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Yeah, just silly. Just sometimes you need to switch off and you need to just watch these glamorous women living a whole different life.
That's right. Like, you and I don't have much in common, but you sure are fun to watch. That's kind of how I feel about like my werewolf fiction. I'm just like, I do not understand any of the things that are happening as it pertains to my life. It's really, really fun.
A bit of escapism, right? We all need a bit of escapism these days.
I love it. Well, I got to tell you, Stephanie, thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation. Listeners, I do want you to know, and I'm going to make this, I am going to make this promise to you because I did reach out to our producer and confirm that it was okay. But Stephanie and I also, we had a conversation about sleep in pre-show prep. And so I ask you to keep your eyes out for a forthcoming episode about the power of sleep for entrepreneurs, because we know that you are probably not getting enough sleep. But thank you so much, Stephanie. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. And folks, we also want to give one final thank you to our episode sponsor. Today's episode of Startup Hustle was sponsored by Gusto. Gusto is an all-in-one HR platform. We know that us entrepreneurs, we often struggle with that back end minutia of the day-to-day, and Gusto is there to make things easier for you. It's an all-in-one HR platform. Check out Gusto. You will have everything you need in just a few clicks of your mouse. You can even get 3 months free when you go to gusto.com/startuphustle. That is gusto.com/startuphustle. Also want to tell you to keep an eye out for Andrew Morgans. He is one of the co-hosts of the Startup Hustle podcast, and he is an expert. He is a guru. He is a man about town as it relates to e-commerce. So if you want to get on Amazon, if you want to sell your products online, definitely check out his episodes. They drop on Tuesdays and he is a master of it. So thank you so much, friends. We are so grateful that you take the time to listen to us week after week, and keep doing so. We will catch you on the flip side.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.